Open your Bibles tonight, if you would, to the book of Daniel. It's really been my pleasure to study this book. The Lord is so good, and we've entered into a period of time through these prophets that my preparation time takes a lot more than it would have in the earlier books of the Old Testament or even in the New Testament when we get there. But these prophets have been far more time-consuming as it relates to my preparation. And isn't God so good? He has given me the time in between snowstorms to be able to have this time to study. I spent a great part of yesterday and all of this morning just putting together. And a part of that is because the book of Daniel is a little bit complicated. It bounces around. Daniel, the book isn't written. One thing that'll help, and I had not even really taken time to notice this before, but the book of Daniel is not written in chronological order. It doesn't go 1 through 12 in the order of Daniel's life. The end of Daniel's life is more around the time of chapter 6. 1 through 6 is more chronological, and chapter 7 is a bit of a review, and then 8, 9, 10 in there is prophetic. And so the Daniel chapter 6, Daniel in the lion's den, he's probably 80 years old, somewhere in that time frame. And that's something I had never put together. Another thing that we miss as English-speaking people, the book of Daniel was not written entirely in Hebrew. From chapter 1, the beginning of chapter 1 through chapter 2 and verse 4. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Sirach, O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, this thing is gone from me. Now you, right there at that point, that Chaldean is a synonymous term for Babylonian. And right at that time, the book of Daniel is written from that point on through the end of chapter 7 in the language of the day for the Babylonian people. Now the Babylonian people of that day were the world power domination. Similarly, the English language is the normal language, the industry standard, we say, the trade standard for the globe. If you want to do something, even across the pond, they call it, even across the ocean, if you want to do something, you got to speak English, or you got to at least have somebody to interpret from English, because English is the standard. In this day, Aramaic was the standard of the Babylonian people. And you have some introductory remarks from Daniel, chapter 1 and the very beginning of chapter 2, that he wrote in Hebrew. And then, as I say, chapter 2, verses 4 and 5 right there, the thing changes into Aramaic and goes all the way through the end of chapter 7. Now, what's significant about that is that from chapter 2, verse 5, on up through the end of chapter 7, Daniel wrote this in Aramaic. He wrote it in the language that was prevailing of that day. Like English is prevailing now in this day, but he wrote it in the prevailing language of the day. That way the audience is virtually everybody. The audience is not just the Hebrew children, but virtually everybody. Because God was revealing his sovereignty. We know the story of Nebuchadnezzar. God showed Nebuchadnezzar that he was nothing. And Nebuchadnezzar saw God as the high and lifted up one. Now, all of the book of Daniel is God revealing his sovereign control over everything. He sets up kings, he takes down kings. He shuts up the mouths of the lions, He makes the fiery furnace not to have any effect on a person, or three people in that case. And so all of this book, God is showing that I am in control sovereignly over everything. And from chapter 2, verse 4 or 5, on through the end of chapter 7, that is written in Aramaic to show that to everyone. God is sovereign. After that, chapter 8 and beyond, he goes back and writes it all in Hebrew. This is then a message primarily for the Hebrew children. This is a primarily prophetic section that deals with what is to come. And so that isn't intended for the nations as a whole. It's intended for the Hebrew children. So he writes it in Hebrew. Not only that, the prophecies that have been taking place in the book of Daniel, you read the book of Daniel and you'll see a lot of picturesque things. You'll see, we'll get to it in chapter 2, but you'll see a lot of prophecies about kingdoms rising and another kingdom rising up above that and crashing the first one down, and there's four kingdoms revealed, five if you count the Antichrist. And in this book, there are a lot of prophecies, and the children of Israel might be thinking, wow, what a mess we're in. But wait, Daniel said this would happen. God is just working out his plan. And so they begin to read. In fact, in Daniel chapter 9, turn with me to Daniel chapter 9. This is exactly what's going on here. In the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus of the seed of the Medes, which was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by books the number of the years whereof the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in desolations of Jerusalem. What Daniel said, paraphrasing, is that, hey, I was reading the writings of Jeremiah. Jeremiah said 70 years of desolation, 70 years of captivity. And Daniel says, you know what? We're just about to the end of that. And so because of the writings of Jeremiah, Daniel reads it and says, oh, I see what's going on. I know what's happening. And that's what is the reason for chapter 8 through the rest of the book being written in Hebrew, so that the rest of the children of Israel that follow them after that time can say, oh, I see what's going on. And they take heart in as to what's going on. They know that God hasn't lost control of the thing. You think about children that have been born in captivity. Daniel was taken into captivity as just a little young lad. And then say he has children. And unless they're really a devoted family and really teach their children the things of the Lord, they look around and they say, we're Hebrew children living in Babylonia. What's going on? Has God lost control of the situation? And someone skilled in the word can say, no, he hasn't lost control of anything. Look at this. And then Daniel reads 70 years. And he says, hey, he begins to calculate up. We're almost there. So go back to the book of Daniel chapter 1. We'll have to move rather quickly tonight. But in the book of Daniel chapter 1, I want to read verses 1 and 2. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. Remember, we talked about that. Jehoiakim had been set up, appointed, and made a puppet king by Nebuchadnezzar. And he rebelled. And Nebuchadnezzar said, that's enough. Third strike and you're out. And I'm going to take over the place. And so he besieges Jerusalem for 2 years and basically starves them out. Okay? Verse 2, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, into Nebuchadnezzar's hand, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. Now, Daniel is announcing that he has been, well, let's read on a little farther. And the king spake, verse 3, and the king spake unto Ashpenaz, master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans or Babylonian, and the language is Aramaic. And the king appointed them a daily provision. So let's read, stop off there at verse 4 and get the picture. Jerusalem had been besieged 2 years, and it has fallen. Nebuchadnezzar has taken over. Nebuchadnezzar has ordered that look out among young, handsome, sharp, smart men, and we're going to reprogram them. We're going to raise them up from young up in the things of the Chaldeans or the Babylonians. We're going to raise them up and teach them our gods and our thoughts. Well, Daniel is one of them. He has his name changed to Belteshazzar. And that is in a parallel to a Babylonian god. So here is this child of God, one of the Hebrew children, now has a name of one of the gods of Babylonia. And then you have, let's find them here. Verse 6. Now among these choice men, now among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. Now you recognize their Hebrew or their Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They're actually names given to them in an effort to forget their God and reprogram them, because all of their new names, their Babylonian names, now are associations with gods of Babylonia. And so I told Jen, I'm going to try to stop calling them Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I mean, that's how we know them, but every one of those names has an association with one of their gods. And it was all an effort to reprogram them. And this, if they could reprogram a couple, sharp, bright, good-looking young fellas, apt to teach, they would have an inside into swaying more of the children of Israel to their way of thinking. You get Daniel and the other three, I don't know their other names well enough yet. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Get those four guys to start teaching younger people and other people the ways of the Babylonian people and of their gods. And quickly you can turn the tide. And that's their goal. That's their plan. Of course, with these four, it doesn't work that way. But we meet Daniel then in this chapter in about 605 BC, just a young man. Most believe barely a teenager. And then they're given a 3-year training school. Look at verse 21, the last verse of Daniel chapter 1. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. Now, without going to adding up all the years, We know that Daniel lived through the reign of four kings. He lived all the way through Cyrus. That's not, by the way, that's king of Persia. Because Persia is going to come and take over Babylon. But he served under Nebuchadnezzar. And Daniel and his three friends were elevated high in the Babylonian government. And we'll see why in a little bit. But Daniel served under Nebuchadnezzar. And then the king that followed him was Belshazzar. Not Belteshazzar, that was Daniel. But Belshazzar. And then when the Persian folks came over and set up shop in the Babylonian area, Darius was king for a while, and then Cyrus. So Daniel served under four kings. Well, chapter 2 comes along, the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. He dreamed some dreams, and he was troubled. And he called all of his own wise men around him, and he said, "Tell me what the dream means." And they said, "We don't know. We can't figure it out." And Daniel apparently was not in that group at that time. I don't think from reading the narrative that he was elevated to that level yet. But the wise men that the king had at that time, they said, "We can't figure it out." The king gets angry and he says, "Off with all your heads." That's what you did back in those days. You walked into the presence of the king without the right bow, without the right reverence, off with his head. You walk into the presence of the king with bad news, off with his head. And so the king says, "You guys can't figure out my dream? All of you, off with your heads." And Daniel says, wait a minute. My God can interpret that dream. And he's quick to tell the king, "It's not in me, but my God will reveal this to me, and I'll tell you." So the king says, "All right, tell me the dream." Now the dream was basically of a person. And it's found in chapter 2. Look at verse 32. Yeah, verse 31. "Thou, O king, sawest and behold a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible." Verse 32. "And the image's head was of fine gold." Now, we're going to read on in a little bit that represents a kingdom. The image's head was of fine gold. "His breast and his arms, silver." That's another kingdom. "His belly and his thighs of brass." That's a third kingdom. "His legs of iron, his feet part iron and part clay." That's a fourth kingdom. And he goes on and he tells them about these four kingdoms. The first kingdom is the Babylonian kingdom. Here in a little bit, towards the end of chapter 2, he says, "Thou, O Nebuchadnezzar, you are the head of brass." Head of gold. And apparently Nebuchadnezzar goes, "Really? Yeah, but didn't you get the picture?" When the interpretation is given, Daniel unpacks all this, and he said that the head of gold, you're that. But the chest and arms of silver, that's going to destroy you. And then the belly and thighs of brass, that's going to destroy them. And the feet and legs and feet of iron and clay, that's going to destroy all of you. So you have four successive kingdoms, and all Nebuchadnezzar got out of that was, "I'm the head of gold." And so chapter 3, what's he do? He builds a gold image in the plain of Dura. And he says, "Everybody bow to that gold image." Well, guess what that gold image most likely was? Nebuchadnezzar's mug, you know? And all he seemed to get out of that was, "Hey, I'm the head of gold." What about the part that another kingdom is going to come and trample you? "Oh, well, I'm the head of gold, you know? I don't understand that altogether, but that's what happened. Nebuchadnezzar goes ahead and makes that image in chapter 3. Of course, we know that chapter because Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah will not bow. Of course, we know them, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But the three Hebrew children will not bow to the head of gold. And so they're cast into the fiery furnace. And Nebuchadnezzar realizes, there's more to the God of these Hebrew children than I really understood. And then there's another dream in chapter 4. And Nebuchadnezzar dreams about a tree. Look at verses 23 through 27. And whereas the king saw a watcher and an holy one coming down from heaven and saying, hew the tree down and destroy it. Notice it says, yet leave the stump of the roots thereof in the earth. Now the reason they're going to leave the stump and the roots is because it will spring up. But he does give the order to cut the tree down. I'm in chapter 4, verse 23. And so the command is given saying, hew the tree down and destroy it, yet leave the stump and the roots thereof in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts of the field till 7 times, or probably 7 years, pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as an oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and 7 times shall pass over thee, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. And whereas they command to leave the stump of the tree roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee. After that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. Wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. So Daniel has the ability to interpret the king's dream. He said it's a tree, but that tree is going to be cut down and it's going to be driven out into the field and made to be like a beast. And so Daniel pleads with Nebuchadnezzar, humble yourself before God. Well, he didn't. And look at verse 29. At the end of the 12 months he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. The king spake and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? And while the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. The very moment that he speaks the words, he looks up, he gets out on his roof, and he looks out over all of Babylonia, and he says, look what I've built. Remember, Daniel said a whole year earlier, bow before God. And he didn't do that. And while the words were still in his mouth, God took him down, drove him out into the field, and we know from the chapter that he wandered around like a beast, his claws like talons, and he crawled around and ate like a beast for 7 years. Daniel told him what was going to happen, wrote it in Aramaic, and he didn't listen. Pleaded with the king, humble before God, and he didn't listen. So we know the end of chapter 4. God brings Nebuchadnezzar back to himself. Verse 34. Nebuchadnezzar lifted up his eyes to heaven, and his understanding returned Look what he said in verse 35, "And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and doeth according to the will of the army of heaven, and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou?" He does according to his will. He does it all. He raises rulers and he puts them down. I wonder if it's sinking in now that Nebuchadnezzar says, wait a minute, I'm the head of gold. The chest of silver is going to win pretty soon. Well, doesn't much matter to Nebuchadnezzar, because at the end of chapter 4, we don't hear any more about Nebuchadnezzar. Chapter 5, there's a new king in the town, Belshazzar. We know about Belshazzar making a feast and taking the idols or the instruments of the house of God and using them in idolatry. If you went down and heard Brother Lafferty speak, he brought a great message from chapter 5. Perversion that was done with the vessels of the house of God. And Belshazzar got to see the handwriting on the wall. And he didn't live very long. At the end of chapter 5 and verse 30, "In that night was Belshazzar the king of the Chaldeans slain." Chaldean and Babylonian, you understand, are interchangeable. Belshazzar was the king, and he was slain that night. But look, chapter 5, verse 31. "And Darius, the Median, Darius of the Medes, took the kingdom, being about 62 years old." You see, that's exactly what Daniel said would happen. Darius and the Medes. The Mede kingdom and the Persian kingdom had teamed up. And they were the chest of silver that was going to come and take over. Look at chapter 7. Chapter 7. And notice in verse 1, now he's backtracking. Now Daniel is doing some review. "In the first year of Belshazzar." He's backtracking and he's reviewing and he's filling in the gaps. And now jump up to verse 4. Verse 3. "And four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another." There in verse 2, Daniel had seen a vision of the sea being in turmoil, being all stirred up. Four beasts came from the sea. "The first like a lion." For time's sake, go to verse 5. "Another beast like a bear." Verse 6. "And after this I behold, and lo, another like a leopard." So we have a lion, a bear, and a leopard so far. And then after this, verse 7. "I saw in the night visions a fourth beast." He doesn't even have words to describe it. No lion, bear, leopard, giraffe, hippopotamus, nothing. He doesn't have the words to describe it. Just a dreadful and terrible image rising up, the fourth beast. Well, what you begin to learn, verse 17, "These great beasts which are four kings which shall rise out of the earth." The first one was the Babylonian king. The first real identifiable superpower. And it rose up. And Nebuchadnezzar was told by Daniel, "You're not going to last forever." And Belshazzar didn't get that message either. And Darius of the Medes, and the Medes and the Persians went together. From then on, it'll say Medes and Persians together. And the second beast rising up out of the ocean, the Medes and Persians. And they don't reign too awful long. And the Greeks come along. And the Greeks take over. And that's the third beast that comes up out of the ocean. And you can read on through this chapter. And, chapter 8, verse 20. Another parallel dream that's filling in the gaps of this same idea. Chapter 8, verse 20. The ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia. And the rough goat is the king of Greece. And so the Babylonian king had already been there. The Medes and Persians take over that. And then pretty soon the Greek people take over them. And then that fourth beast that is not described much in the book of Daniel. Well, there's a description that so troubles Daniel, it takes his breath away. And he leaves off trying to describe it. But you see, Daniel had already seen the Babylonian people fall to the Medo-Persian people. And that had already taken place. He was under Darius and Cyrus, kings of the Medes and the Persians. He was specifically interested in what's next. That's the Greek takeover. That's the Greek folks coming in, being the world domination. So he spends nearly the rest of the book unpacking information about the Greek world domination before Christ, before the time of Christ, in that 400 years of silence. Not much is said about the Roman takeover, which follows the Greek one. And he even says, at the end of the book, chapter 12. I'm not able to put my eyes on it. It's twice in this book where he tells him to seal up the information. And I know I have it in my notes. I know it's found. But I'm not finding it. I'm not going to keep looking. Daniel is told to seal up the information. 12:9. And he said, "Go thy way, Daniel, for thy words are closed up and sealed till the times of the end." So he elaborates greatly on the Greek kingdom, thank you, by the way, and he only gives a little bit of a nod towards the Roman kingdom, but he's not concerned with that, because that's way down the road. Guess where that information comes in? Who in the New Testament unpacks things to come as it relates to the Roman Empire? The book of Revelation. The book of Revelation talks about it thoroughly, and how that from the Roman Empire would rise up the Antichrist. And if we had more time, we could delve into that. But Daniel's not worried about way down there. Daniel's worried about what's next, and that's Greek. Greek rule. And so, chapter 11 and on, Greek domination. Look at the first couple of verses here in chapter 11. "Also I, in the first year of Darius of the Mede, even I stood to confirm and to strengthen him, and now I will show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than they all, and by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up against all the realm of Greece. And a mighty king shall stand up that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will." The Medo-Persian Empire is going to be elevated to the point where it gets the notice of the Greeks, and the Greeks say, "Enough!" And we put them down. And so much goes on in that couple hundred years prior to the time of Christ's entrance onto the scene of the Greek domination. And folks like Antiochus Epiphanes that just thugs, global thugs running over anybody they can run over. And Alexander the Great running over anybody he can run over. And after conquering everybody he thinks he can conquer, he's crying, literally wailing, "I don't have anybody else to conquer." And that kind of domination, Daniel unpacks a lot of that and says, look guys, this is what's coming. And all of that, chapter 8 through 12, is written in Hebrew to tell the Hebrew children, this is what's coming. A very detailed view of history before history ever happened. He's naming places. He's, in some case, naming specific events so specific that we can look back now and say, that was this, without question. And he's doing it all before it ever happened. That's the kind of God that we serve. And that's the kind of God that Daniel was listening to. And so Daniel was an amazing figure. And God gave to him some unbelievable, just awesome revelations of what was to come. And Daniel lived to see many of those things come to pass. And the great thing about the book of Daniel is that when he has a dream, or Neb has a dream, or Belshazzar has a dream, somebody has a dream, and Daniel interprets the dream, he gives the interpretation. He unloads it and says, this means this, and this means this. And he doesn't leave you wondering nearly as much as what you might think. But once you get into it and start reading it, he spells it out pretty plainly. Interesting book. I've really enjoyed studying it. And I pray that just what little bit we've been able to give you tonight whets your appetite. And you'll go home and read the book of Daniel. Check it off your list early if you have to. Or read the book of Daniel and don't check it off. And then when we get there, we'll read it again. Let's pray.